Normally, being a little extra can be a bit much, but when it comes to healthcare, it pays to be extra. And United Healthcare makes it easy with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they supplement your primary plan, helping you manage out-of-pocket costs without the usual requirements and restrictions like deductibles and enrollment periods. So when it comes to covering your medical bills, you can feel good about being a little extra. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hello and welcome to The Ruck. In a moment, you'll hear a special episode recorded live from the News Building in London. On the panel, Shane Horgan, Jamie Roberts, Stephen Jones, Owen Slott, and your host for the episode is Stuart Barnes.
Yeah, I was going to start with something Steve wrote Sunday in the Sunday Times. He talked about this tournament, and is it slightly devalued? And I don't know who of you read it, but he talked about it's a little bit like paying 100 quid to go and see Bruce Springsteen, and you get to the concert and you find the Wurzels are there instead. Now, I will say that as a West Country man, Adj Cutler was a great sonneteer of Somerset. So, Jones, you got that wrong. But, Steve, do you still feel that this tournament is about having the best players playing the best rugby? Or is it something different to that? Is it about the two P's, having a party and the patriotism?
Everyone is really looking forward to it. Everyone's been saving up and everyone's getting ready to pack and go, and the players are reaching a peak, and the coaches and the media and everything. And TV people are, you know, turning their sockets on at the grounds, etc. And that'll never stop, never mind who's playing. But I think Jamie and the rest of us were talking beforehand. I can't ever remember there being so many injuries to so many starting players. Really is sort of, it's worrying. It devalues it in the sense that international should be about all the players being the elite and the first choice. This time it's not like that. So I think in a way it's devalued, in another way we get to see loads of other people we've never seen before, but it is worrying that there are so many people who can't play this weekend.
Jamie, you're the one of us left who's still going strong. Steve says devalued. Is it realistic to expect these teams now to be anywhere near their full strength?
Well, Wales have a lot of injuries, and I still wasn't picked, so I must be shit.
They just want to go sideways now. They just want to go straight.
Yeah, it's troubling. The amount of injuries I've seen this year, it's pretty frightening. And we were discussing earlier, you know, whether it's down to the laws or just the player load. Obviously, after a Lions year, you probably expect quite a few players to get injured. You know, their load over the last 18 months or so would take its toll. But it gives great opportunity. It gives great opportunity to every country to develop strength and depth, probably 2 years, well, 18 months out from the Rugby World Cup. And so certainly in Wales, this case, yes, we're maybe, you know, on this opening weekend, we're not seeing, you know, Faletau, Bigger, Liam Williams, Jonathan Davis, these guys, but players will have a chance to play at the highest level in the, you know, the best tournament in the Northern Hemisphere, and we'll see what they're made of. Because ultimately they'll sink or swim, you know.
Yeah. Shane, when you play for Ireland and you beat England, and it's maybe not an outstanding game, but I mean, do you get the sense that your supporters in Ireland are going, well done, you won, but shit, that was a hopeless game? Or is it a sense of, it really doesn't matter, it's about the occasion, it's about being Irish, it's about being English, it's about being Welsh?
I don't know if you've ever been to an Ireland-England game before, but from an Irish perspective, let me tell you, there's only one thing that matters. And maybe actually, it's an interesting question, because maybe the Ireland perspective has evolved a little bit over the last number of years with some of the success that Ireland's had, but certainly not in that fixture. There's only one thing that matters, and that's an Irish victory over the English. And we've seen that, you know, last year in Ireland. You know, they won the game in the Aviva. It didn't mean anything for their championship. All it meant was England didn't win a Grand Slam, and it was celebrated like we'd won the World Cup. So there's good and bad, and that's maybe a little insight into the Irish psyche, and maybe the Welsh as well. But I do think, you know, with other teams, though, that has changed, and there's now an onus on this group of Irish players, because of success they've had in the past and the standard they're playing at the moment, is to perform at a certain level. And we saw that in the autumn. 2 years ago, there was a lot of talk about sort of conservative nature of Joe Smith's gameplay, the fact that we were relying on a kicking game too much, we weren't getting the mess out of our players. So that conversation's evolved, has changed after the summer tour this year and the autumn this year. I think we saw a more sophisticated, evolved gameplay from Ireland. It's not necessary from a public point of view for that to carry over into a victory against England, but I think that there's a broader question there. I think it's necessary for Ireland to play in that way if they actually want to beat an England at their best.
Which brings us nicely to England. Owen, 22 wins out of 23 games for England, but there is a perception that in 2017 England stalled as a team. They won the championship, but they didn't play a brand of rugby that a lot of people felt they need to win to play if they're going to win a World Cup. Do you see winning being enough for England given their injuries, or do you feel they have to kick on in how they play the game?
I think to fulfil their long-term ambitions, which is obviously to win a World Cup, as Eddie reminds us daily, then they have to do more. The perception that England have not played a great brand of rugby is one that dear old Eddie also chucks out every day. He likes to talk about this as if he's been badly reported and badly treated for all his successes, and that's just part of the game that he plays, but that he plays on a daily basis, because he's forever putting out messages and trying to influence the way people receive things. But there's absolutely no doubt in my mind that the way they finished 2017 is not going to win a World Cup. And he started 2017 saying that it's all about running the other teams off their feet and having the crowd on the edge of their seats. And I don't think we've really had much of that. We had one game in the last Six Nations against Scotland, which now looks like a freak rather than the norm, and it needs to be a bit more of the norm.
It's funny, Stuart, because their height under Eddie Jones was the three tests they played in Australia summer before last. They were absolutely superb, and they've not come remotely like anywhere near that ever since, in my opinion.
I think also that they changed the way Northern Hemisphere teams were playing at that period of time as well. When Eddie came in, there was a fundamental change in having, in effect, two first 5/8s. Something that I absolutely love that style of play. I think it opens up a complete second wave of attack. And it was revolutionary in Six Nations rugby. And you saw the results in that first year. They blew everyone away. Now, it wasn't the only aspect of their game. Selection, you got selection right. I think the interplay between forwards and backs was certainly better, but I think that was the key basis for what they were trying to do. And probably since that Australian tour that you speak of, they've been analysed more carefully by the opposition. It's not something entirely new, so it becomes more obvious. And they haven't actually executed it as well as they did in that first year, bizarrely. So I think what we're seeing from the more forward-thinking teams, not just in international rugby, but also in club and provincial rugby right throughout Europe, the ones that are having the most success are the ones that I think are playing, you know, with that little bit of ingenuity, with that little bit of sophistication, and those that are playing a two first receiver game, whether that be with a full back coming into the line a bit more as a second receiver, or playing a 12 that can pass.
Now that's interesting, because you talked about the two receivers, and he loves the Ford Farrell access, but he also loves the ability to get over the gain line. When he joined England, he talked about wanting to have Polynesian influence, these big, powerful ball-carrying Tongans or Samoans, and he's missing Billy Vunipola, and he's been desperately hoping to get Tuilagi back. We're hoping that Tio is going to be back. And Jamie, they played with two playmakers at the first tournament in 2016. Have they got two lateral, and are they missing someone to really give them that ability to crash the game line?
Rugby has changed even the last three or four years. And again, we were speaking about earlier, defences just fill the field now. You watch teams play now, especially at test level, they'll tackle, maybe one will compete, but the rest of the defenders will fill the field. And you look up and there is a brick wall of players. So the more you start playing a bit lateral behind the gain line, you can often lead to a turnover, and next minute you're conceding 7 points under the post. So you have to go forward, and there are many ways to skin a cat in that regard. You need big ball carriers playing flat on the game, and whether you do that through your forwards or your backs. I think England's played some great rugby with Ford and Farrell, but I think they just need a bit of a cover at 13. Jonathan Joseph, he's a very in-to-out player. I think maybe if they had someone who's more out-to-in play, Ben Tail,
a tail to
Alagi is a good foil for those guys. But then if you can bring wingers into the game, guys like Jack Noel, who I think he's fit for this weekend, who can carry and get you game on and get you momentum in a back line, well then it's all about playing a game to suit your personnel. And when they've got those big centres fit and ready to go, you have to kind of mould your team around those.
So Eddie's been desperate to get Ben Teo in.
Oh yeah.
For ages. Well, he started with Manu, as you said, and he saw what Teo did in flashes during the Lions tour. And from the Lions tour, I think in his head it crystallised that he wanted Ford, Farrell, Teo as his people to open the game. And he's put Teo in there. He hasn't played since October, but he's put him straight into the England squad. And I think he'll be on the, if not start, he'll be on the bench on Sunday. And then if he does well, I think he'll play all the way through.
I mean, what's interesting, Jamie made the point, the game has evolved in the last 3 or 4 years. But there are certain essences of the game that don't change at all. And I personally feel England have got a little bit lateral for the reasons we've talked about. And I think back to this guy on my left here, playing in 2009 alongside Brian O'Driscoll in a series the Lions lost in South Africa, where we were fantastic. In 2013, where Jamie was injured, he came into the third test and swept through with a try. There's still a need, isn't there, Jamie, for that ability to put your forwards on the front foot and to get your half-backs playing, and it is a worry for England?
I don't think it's a worry. I think they'll have enough players to play that role. I just think the game now is probably, I feel, going back to where it was 7, 8 years ago, it's all about speed of ball and momentum. If you can go forward with speed of ball, that is the golden ticket, really, to creating space out wide, because defences are just fun in the field. We're not seeing defences getting tight anymore. You go pass and you know, make 30 metres down the touchline. It's not happening now because teams aren't competing. So you have to be clever with your lines of running and support play, and the offloading game is more important now than ever.
George Ford has been playing quite deep for quite a while at Leicester behind Ben Youngs. In contrast, when Johnny Sexton is allowed to play for Leinster, when he's let off the leash, he's getting flatter again like he used to. I mean, do you see Ireland producing more in the midfield this year?
I think they're in a little bit of a tricky situation in the midfield this year, because Ringrose is out. Whether he's out for the whole tournament or not, we don't know. We have to assume that he is. And that means the selection of Henshaw is certainly there. And Henshaw is an incredibly hard-working, talented player. He's over the game line, but he's more than that as well. He's kind of one of the cornerstones to what Ireland are doing, but he's not actually I don't think he's the best player to play 12 for Ireland. And something that Sexton, before he went away to Paris, and Jamie's experience of this, is interesting. He played extremely flat to the line under Joe Smith, brought 3 European Cups to Leinster. He went to Paris, the game in France is slightly different, and he never played at that really attacking line again as flat as he should. He went deeper and deeper and deeper, and it affected his international game. Mm. So he's come back to Leinster, and it's probably only in the last year that he's got that flatness back to his game. And if you can get somebody outside him playing with a similar flatness, I think it really changes the dynamic. Now, if you can't, then if you have a very fast, outbreaking 13 that allows you to cover a lot of the bases. But I've been sort of banging this drum by myself for a long time. There's a player called Joey Carberry who plays fullback for Leinster, or occasionally does. And I just think he's made to be a Giddo type number 12. To play at the flat line with Sexton at the same time, 2 ball carriers, both being threats, but also being able to drag the ball across your body and hold the inside and then move to the outside. And what Jamie is saying is really interesting. is that the defences now are so so early set, and they're so laser focused, and they want to get off the line with such speed. When they identify a player, take the ball to the line, it's almost immediately the ball's not going to go outside. So we can bring our line speed up, we concentrate on this ball. Or if it goes to a big inside forward, we can bring our line speed up and we can knock them behind the gain line. If you can change the thought process in the opposition's head, so you've got a player who can take to the line and pass the ball, or you've got a forward who takes the ball and can deliver it out wide, then you change the entire dynamic of how a team sets up to defend. You put doubt in their mind and you make things really, really difficult. So whether Ireland can potentially do that with a centre selection of Bundiaki and Henshaw, I don't think they can have that game, but they can still have an effective game, and that may be enough to bring them through to the end of the championship.
Steve, Shane talking there about a centre who can take the ball up to the line at the last minute, hold them and then deliver the pass. That's what Owen Farrell has been doing for England. Is he going to stay doing that in the next tournament, in the next year and a half? Or do you see him and moving towards 10?
Eddie's insisted that George Ford is his number 10. He's insisted. Whenever you bring it up, it's almost like, why are you asking me this stupid question? But they've got to keep that in mind, surely, because you know there comes a time when Elliot Daly is back. Well, you can't have Daly, Ford, and Farrell all in the same back division. And I think, in my opinion, I'd put Farrell there now and sort everything else out around him. Because they're getting more and more lateral. I think Farrell can step up. I think Ford is going back in terms of where he sets up. And I think Eddie ought to make the move now.
By the way, it's bizarre that they're going lateral, because the very reason that they're picked as a 10 and a 12 first receiver is to stop them going lateral. You know, and that's not to say to make the ball crash up, but it's to hold the inside and keep space on the outside. So the fact that they are going lateral now and that Farrell is going slightly lateral is a major, major concern for them, because I think the only way that England can win the next World Cup is with two first receivers and those two guys in first and second receiver.
I think one of the English problems is the fact that Ford has, and there was Owen's piece, was it yesterday, Owen?
I've written too many pieces to Ford, what you're talking about.
George Ford. And Ford confessed is the right word. He's been getting deeper and deeper, and I think Jamie would agree. If you're a 12, people just look at fly halves and they think, fine, they just pass the ball on. But if you've got a 10 who's standing very deep, it makes it bloody hard for you, especially with the way the game has changed now. And I think if Ford can get there, we're going to see Farrell running straight, because I think isn't Farrell one of Farrell's greatest strengths, his ability to hold that straight line?
Yeah, exactly. And again, back to Shane's point, talking about England getting lateral, chucking Jonathan Joseph, who plays at 13, is very in to out centre.
Yeah.
So that adds to that kind of lateral aspect, where if they've got someone in those wider channels, I know Mike Brown is pretty good at picking a line, you know, against drift defences, he'll attack the inside shoulder, whereas Jonathan Joseph doesn't really like that. He likes to back his pace and use his outside break. So it's all about combinations, and it's all about getting the right balance in your back line. And I think England have a depth of talent which allows them to do that.
I'll stay with Jamie briefly. You mentioned Mike Brown there. I heard Mike Brown sometime in the last couple of days saying, I don't care what anyone in England thinks of me, I play for Eddie Jones. It almost sounds a bit like a cult. Now, you play with Mike Brown now. There's a lot of people who say, you know, he carries the ball in one hand, he does this wrong, he does that wrong. What is it about this man that makes Jones say, he's my 15?
He hates losing. I don't think I've met many more players who hate losing as much as Mike. He's a quality player. One of my favourites. I'm not sure if many of you remember, he did an interview after we beat England in the World Cup in 2015. I'll never forget that interview he did. And he loves the fact that people disagree with his persona. He thrives on that, which to him proves that he's doing something right and he cares. And he's a top player. He's a top player. On his form and he's fit, he's a top player. He's a great counter-attacking fullback. I think his kicking game is spot on. And defensively, he doesn't miss many. There's the last line of defence. And as I talked about the lines he picks as well, certainly against defences who are very, you know, drift defence, he will attack the inside shoulder and often cause line breaks. So he's a very important part of England's squad. I much rather play against someone like Anthony Watson at 15 than Mike Brown. And I mean that, I think he's a very solid player for England and a huge part of them, you know, if they want to win the tournament this year, I think him staying fit is very important.
Jamie, when you're a player like Mike Brown and you've had your right to play for England questioned so heavily in the media for 2 years probably now.
Yeah.
I mean, you say that he sort of has a sort of bring it on type personality, but at what point, or is it never with Mike Brown, that he might start to wonder himself? Because that's what I think is impressive about him, is that he does sort of take it on the chin and move on. But you know the guy. Does it not hurt at all?
Yeah, I mean, he's played in a team which has won 22 of 23 test matches.
So he's not having a bad time.
And so, yeah, and so obviously the English public will crave this beautiful, fancy rugby, but ultimately it's about winning. And they've won the last two tournaments, and you know, we talk about Ireland beating it. They won't care how they win. It's about winning. Test match rugby is about winning, and you find whatever way it takes to win the game. And you know, Mike Brown, the way he plays the game. Obviously, Eddie sees a security in the way he plays the game. He's great into the high ball. Defensively, he's very strong. Picks great lines, and his kicking game is strong. As I said, he's a very solid player. And he's proved, you know, priceless for England over the last few years, regardless of what the public you might think.
I tell you, it's a good policy for a long career if you're playing the way your coach wants to play.
It's
probably a smart move for him. And ultimately, that's all that matters. And it's a similar, there's a parallel in Ireland with Rob Kearney, who periodically he's questioned about his game and whether he's attacking enough or whether he's overly conservative. But he's delivering exactly what Joe Smith wants. And you know, occasionally, like before the game in Chicago, famously, Joe Smith said, you need a big one. And he delivered a big one. But core skills are very, very big for coaches. And core skills for a full back are even more important. You cover the backfield, you make sure the ball doesn't hit grass. You've got a good punt, you're good under the high ball. You know, that carries a lot of weight, even in the modern game.
Steve, we're hearing now what the coaches want. We're hearing what the players are giving their coaches. Let's get back to what we want now. Jonesy, would you have Mike Brown in this English team? And how many alterations do you think you would have to what Eddie's going to pick? Are you convinced that Jones is going the right way in terms of selection?
No.
I had a feeling.
The whole thing bewilders me, because if you compare things that Eddie said on the Tuesday and then Thursday, it's totally different for a start. And I think he's mucking around too much. I didn't like it when a national squad came out and there were asterisks by someone. He said, what does this asterisk mean? And it meant he's an apprentice. It's an international rugby squad. I don't think you should have apprentices. I don't think you should bother about the World Cup in 2019 until 2019. I think you should get all your procedures right and you should pick your first team. And when someone gets in the England squad who's only played two starts on the flank for Newcastle, there's something wrong. And I think that's Eddie being clever but trying to be too clever.
Can you add names? And is Chris Robshaw one of them?
Yeah. Look, Eddie says, I'm not interested in club play. Well, he's obviously never watched Exeter, because Don Armand is playing completely and utterly out of his skin every week. So, okay, if you're not going to watch club rugby to pick the England team, fine, just ignore him. But there are people out there who are better than people in the squad.
Jamie, club rugby to international rugby, there's a lot of people, a lot of journalists, they watch a club game and think that's a natural evolutionary period. You go straight through from there into international team, you get someone like Eddie Jones, you get Warren Gatland, to an extent you get Joe Smith saying it ain't that simple. What's your view on the golf required?
It's not that simple, and you know, I've seen great club players, I've played with great players, players at club level who have gone on to play test level and sank rather than swim.
And the main reason?
I think it's a mentality. I think not just Eddie Jones, I think all the international coaches will pick their squad, one dependent on the way they want to play and the way they feel they can win the game, but vice versa, they'll go, right, my strongest players here, I will formulate a game plan to play with those players. But they'll also see players who have a huge amount of growth, potential. And so, talk about this young flanker from Newcastle being one example. Eddie has obviously picked him because he sees a huge amount of growth in him, the same as Marcus Smith at Newcastle, a guy who he thinks, if he exposes to the environment and exposes him with a cohort of players who will add to his game that they'll see, you know, will reap rewards in the future. But yeah, then again, the argument is, right, you pick your strongest squad, you win for the now, but we must remember there's a World Cup in 18 months' time, so it's about having players in your squad who you think will grow, you know, some will grow quicker than others, but who will peak in 18 months' time.
This is all George Smith's fault. This conversation is because of George Smith. Because when Eddie was the Australian coach, he saw George Smith age 12 or something, and he spotted his talent, and he thought, this is the guy that's going to take me places. He dragged him out from whatever level he was playing. He'd played one game of Super Rugby level at a time, and said, you're the guy, and he got it right. And he's come to England, and he thinks, and I'm not saying he hasn't, because he might be right, but that's why he's picking players like Gary Graham, who's had two starts for Newcastle, or Marcus Smith, who he saw playing school rugby with Brighton College, when they were on a training camp there.
I suppose, does he do it for his own amusement? I often get the feeling that that's the case with press conferences. I think he just gets bored. He throws something out, and see what the reaction is. He was pulled up one time already this week. They asked him, you know, I think somebody, he was saying that, you know, we're already being written off, and somebody asked him the question, well, you know, who's been writing you off? And he goes, well, maybe I made that up. You know, so I think I think that's sort of sometimes a selection smack of it. Listen, it is a bugbear of mine, because there's always this conversation about the next World Cup. And the next World Cup is important, and it's great. But you know what? The Six Nations is an amazing tournament that you don't get to win very often, and you get to win a Grand Slam even less. The idea that it's a petri dish for a World Cup that comes up every 4 years, I don't accept it. I'm not willing to accept it. I think it's too brilliant a tournament. You ask people in the Southern Hemisphere and the tournaments they have what they think of the Six Nations and the history and the majesty that goes along with it. And you know what? They will speak about it like, you know, like nothing else. The World Cup has only been around for a number of years. The history of the Six Nations has been there for, you know, 100-odd years. And to devalue it by bringing in a player who's had two starts for their professional team, I think is a bit of a piss take, to be honest with you.
But isn't this the reality of it? I mean, Jamie came in and straight away he's saying there's a World Cup in 18 months. That's what players are thinking. That's what coaches are thinking. It's what Joe Smith is probably thinking. And there's a situation now. I think, you know, we look at this tournament. We talk about the majesty of the Six Nations. But to be honest, for much of the last 10 years, all the best elite international rugby has been played in the Rugby Championship, but the party, the piss up, the fun, everything around it has been the Six Nations. And has there not been a sense, Jamie, that occasionally we've been so obsessed with bloodying the English nose or nailing the Scots in Edinburgh that we've actually lost our way towards the bigger goal, if that is the bigger goal?
The bigger goal of what?
Of what you sort of intimated and what I believe, which is perceived as the World Cup. That's what international coaches, if you ask every international coach in the world what their biggest aim was, I think most of them would say performing well in the World Cup.
I agree with Shane's point though. I think the Six Nations is one of the great tournaments. Yeah. Every year it's where you want to peak for as a player. But the great, you talk about those moments of, you know, beating England and beating Scotland. It's, you get 80 minutes every year to have a chance to do that. And you know, as a Welshie, for us playing England is to beat England is everything. As a rugby player in Wales, not just for the players, the fans. You know, everyone in the country is watching it, whether it's at home or the pubs around. You kind of get a sense of who you're representing as a Welsh rugby player. But that's what makes the tournament special. It doesn't. It's when you get into the Six Nations, the coaches will think about the World Cup and the growth of certain individuals, but as a player, it's about those special games. You know, Wales playing Ireland this year, you know, to go out to Dublin and try and beat Ireland in Dublin is just such an amazing, amazing thing as a player. And likewise with all the other countries. So, no, I don't think the party is too soft. I think I love hearing the stories of the fans. I love hearing the stories of the nights out with the players. Some of them make it on social media, but there's been some great stories down the years. I'm sure Shane will share a few Irish ones. And it's amazing. It's a great, you know, to see your teammates as well. I know a few of the lads who have been on the Lions tour in the summer to come back in and share a beer with those guys you would have played with in the summer, and obviously going up against, you know, those big speeches and the post-match dinners. They're all such special moments in your playing career.
Normally, being a little extra can be a bit much, but when it comes to healthcare, it pays to be extra. And United Healthcare makes it easy with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they supplement your primary plan, helping you manage out-of-pocket costs without the usual requirements and restrictions like deductibles and enrollment periods. So when it comes to covering your medical bills, you can feel good about being a little extra. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
Rebag, your premier destination for luxury resale. Elevate your style with our curated collection of bags, watches, and fine jewelry. At Rebag, quality is our priority. Each piece meticulously vetted and verified by experts, ensuring your investment is nothing short of perfection. Buy and sell finds from the world's top brands, including Hermès, Chanel, and Cartier. Access expertly crafted and hard-to-find pieces that redefine luxury. Your next investment awaits at Rebag. Get 10% off your first purchase with code REBAG10. That's 10% off the luxury you deserve. Don't miss out. Head to Rebag.com and enter code REBAG10 at checkout. That's REBAG10.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
One guy and one team to win the tournament. Who's going to be the main man? Who's going to win the tournament? We'll start with Owen.
Right, thanks for starting with me. Well, I do actually think England will win the tournament. I know that's going slightly against the grain, because I do think it will come down to that final game at Twickenham. I suspect that will be the case. And so if you want one guy who might be the difference, then
yeah.
I would pick Sam Simmons, because all of a sudden he's looking like England's number eight, and there's going to be a lot of pressure on that guy to do a job that, as we've said, Billy can't do, Nathan Hughes can't do. They need someone to do a lot of work in that area.
Shane?
I'm not certain if it will come, well, it may come down to that last game, England versus Ireland, but I think there's maybe a story that's going to unfold, or I certainly did before some of the injuries that Scotland have sustained over the last couple of weeks. I thought they were going to have a real say in it. I don't think they were going to win the tournament, but I thought they may have a big influence. As you said, that Calcutta Cup game in particular, and the game in Dublin as well. The Scottish teams can occasionally be a bogey for Irish. So I think, yeah, it'll be a brilliant last day, but I think there's a story to be had before that. I think one of the key, or the key man, bizarrely for Ireland, is a prop, and I wrote about it at the weekend. Mm. Tadhg Furlong, who
you love him.
I love him. I love him.
I
think I'm convinced he should be playing in the back line, or maybe more convinced I should be playing in the forward pack.
At these sort of events in the newspapers, you can change your opinion every week. Are you just sticking with him?
No, I do. I remember when my last year in Leinster was his first year coming in, and he's a really charming, nice country lad. But his skill set belies his massive frame. His ability to act as first receiver, to judge the strength and depth of a pass, I think is remarkable. And to get back to the point that I made earlier on, that he changes the way the opposition defend, because if a man with his mouth is running at you, you can't fail but stand your ground, because if you go soft on him, he'll play through you. Now, if you have to stand your ground, that means you can't link up with your outside defenders, and he has the ability and the guile to link as a link player, particularly between forwards and backs. And to watch him do that is something out of the ordinary. I think it's an evolution of what props are, and the props have been evolving over the last, I'd say 8 to 10 years. It used to be just lock down the scrum and buy me a pint at the bar afterwards. That's not enough anymore. There's now this whole panoply of skills that you have to have. It started with defence, then it was more ball carrying, and now what we're seeing that these players have to be link players. And I truly think that he's the most complete prop in the world at the moment, and that's why. And I think he is fundamental to the way Ireland play. And for him to remain fit, and remain active, and remain playing is key to their success otherwise.
Steve, the 2018 World Six Nations.
What he said.
Your team and your man.
I would have gone for Furlong and Ireland. Seriously, I think Ireland will win it. I think they're too nasty, too experienced. They're too together. There's no mucking around by the coach, by throwing people in from nowhere. Wales, it might be surprising that. I'm not saying this because Jamie's sitting here, but if Dan Bigger and Jamie were 10 and 12, I think Wales would have as good a chance as anybody. Because for some reason, Warren has drifted away from what I think, what he believes himself, which I think is completely wrong. But I think Ireland will win it. I think they'll do it with a bit to spare, because I think England haven't got the reserve strength this year and have slightly gone off track. But for one player, maybe not the greatest player in the world, but I absolutely love Jack Nowell, because if you watch Exeter, he just gives them electricity on his own. He might not be Gerald Davis or David Duckham or David Campese, but he's got a fantastic electricity that inspires people. And I think that if he's going to be fit this week, he'll have a starring role in Italy.
Jamie, you're playing with and against all these star players. Who's your man?
Obviously, I have to back the Welsh. If we can weather the storm that is Scotland first up, obviously we've spoken about their front five problems, and I think we've then got a Twickenham, and you know, I talked about Wales, England. I think we're playing an English side with a few question marks, and that'll give the Welsh a lot of hope. You know, the pressure will be all on the English in that game, and I think that serves us well. So I'll go for Wales, and I'll go with, you know, we're talking about the style of play. Wales are playing, the Scarlets are banging form. I think Gareth Davis, now Reece Webb has been ruled out. Gareth Davis at scrum half could be seriously one to watch this tournament. He's lightning quick. I think Wales will have to play with tempo, play with width, and he's paramount to that.
Thanks, Jamie. An articulate end into what I hope has been an entertaining night. Even Steve with his dying voice. Thank you.
Off Air, the podcast with Jane Garvey and Fee Glover.
I go to the sink and I have some cheese.
You eat cheese in the sink?
Doesn't everybody?
Every Monday to Thursday, Jane and Fee keep the microphones on after their Times radio show.
I think if we were to do a Mr. and Mrs.
Oh, no.
Yes. How would that go in the booth?
Badly. It would go very badly.
Unencumbered and off air.
Two tiny women with gobs.
Off Air, the podcast. Now available on the Times radio app.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Hey, folks, it's Mark Maron from WTF. I've been talking to all kinds of famous people in my garage since 2009, including a sitting president.
You know, I don't imagine you were flying in here on the chopper thinking like, you know, I am nervous about Mark.
No, I wasn't.
Okay, well, that's good.
That would be a problem.
It would be a problem.
If the president was feeling stressed about
it. Coming to my garage.
Coming to your garage.
And now there's even more WTF when you subscribe to the full Marin to get weekly bonus content and all WTF episodes ad-free. Listen to WTF wherever you get podcasts and subscribe to the full Marin at go.acast.com/WTF.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.